7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 237 of Color of Magic, a Magic Gaming podcast where we talk about all types of issues that affect gamers at and away from their gaming tables and computers. I am your host, Power Dragon, and for 237 episodes, still have the same dude riding shotgun, Brian Cyanic. How's it going, dude?
It going well. Ready to dive into what has been a kind of a wild week of things here.
Yeah. We're kind of all over the place this week, dude. There's a little bit of news. It felt from like all parts of the industry, even for Magic. There's just stuff kind of all over the place. Which is weird because it seemed like a week where nothing happened, but a lot of things still happened kind of under the hood. So,
well, like we'll talk about how your average, you know, is it John Q. Public sitting in his local comic book shop. Some of this may not affect you, but for people who want to dive deep into why are they doing this thing that way, it's that kind of week.
Yeah, basically, you know, and I think you bring up a good point, too, that we take for granted that everybody that plays a game or a hobby or whatever knows everything about it, knows all the news about it, or whatever. But people are still amazed when I tell them I travel the country yearly and I go to local stores, and the average player for a variety of games, they play their game. They go to the local store, they play with their friends, their cousins, whatever. And that's it. They don't know about everything behind the scenes and they don't care.
I learned that the hard way doing news. Like, you're in your bubble. You think, oh my God, the mayor has this incredible sex scandal going on. Everybody knows about it. Then you go try to do the man on the street interview, and it takes you an hour to find anybody. First of all, who even knows who the mayor is?
Yeah, that's also
all,
true.
That a sex scandal is happening. People are, you know, in their own bubbles, except for, you know, the people that are really, really into it and can tell you everything. The majority of us are kind of in our own world on things.
Yeah, that's just to preface things and just say, like, hey, you got to give people some grace that they don't know about certain things, right? Not everybody's on Twitter or Facebook or whatever and sees the news outlet stuff, or they don't follow the same people you follow. So, hell, I've even had it because I've blocked some people and curated my feeds. There's sometimes whole days worth of drama happening on social media, and I get like a little glimpse of it because somebody I know mentions it or something. That's it. I don't even know what they're talking about. You know, right? And people are like, how did you not know? And I'm like, man, none of those people are on my feed anymore. Like, I just don't see them.
I remember having this discussion with my boss at the time, trying to figure out what we were going to do for the man on the street. And he's like, yeah, you asked about the biomedical research center. Like, bro, we know about that. The average person on the street in Shreveport knows nothing about it. And he was, let me show you how to do this interview. And after about the fifth person that had no clue what he was talking about, I could just see him get visibly frustrated, like, it's that big building right over there across the street. Like, I told you, the average person doesn't know what it is.
Doesn't matter. To them, it's just another office building.
Yeah.
They don't know what's inside.
Yeah, sure, if you're a doctor or if you cover, you know, hospitals for, yeah, you know everything about it, but the average person on the street doesn't even know what's over there.
Well, let's get into it. Just before we do, I want to remind everybody, you can still go to patreon.com/colormagic and you can support the show. Throw a little bit our way. It helps us out, especially while we're between sponsors and stuff. Helps keep the lights on. Does a little bit good. Also, you can get a shout out just like Kurtosis, one of our new members. So thank you so much. And for our top level members, you'll know who you are. I just got some fun stuff in the mail for you. So you'll be seeing that probably within a couple of days from you listening to this. But let's get into our lead story because it somewhat connects to last week, right? We had that story about the Wizards president and surprise announcement of resignation, which kind of took everybody off guard, which led to a lot of people, which we said not to do, but led to a lot of people speculating that, oh, well, the Wizards and Hasbro quarterly reports come out next week. She's probably getting out of Dodge before it comes out because it's going to be disastrous news. Well, guess what? The report's out today, and reading through it, it's kind of just business as usual. I would even argue that this was somewhat better news for Wizards than we anticipated.
Yeah, consider they're still writing off $1 billion debt from Entertainment One. These are actually really good. After it was announced, Hasbro stock apparently went up by 11%, so it's way better than what even industry insiders thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and I think it's very easy for people to look at this and take away one or two negative numbers, but understand that they basically lead with, hey, first quarter, overall revenue was down by about 24%, and that's all of Hasbro, not just Wizards, it's all of Hasbro. And they're saying it's largely because of the E1 film and television division that they basically are getting out of and selling, right? There's costs associated with that they're having to slowly take off the books over the next year to 2 years, for layman's terms. Like, so that's going to affect some of their profit numbers. But they did follow up and say, while that led to an overall 9% revenue decline, growth was still up in Wizards and in digital gaming by 7%. And their entertainment division was up 65%. Now, those numbers were largely due to a very good release on Fallout and Thunder Junction sales, because what I don't think people understand as business is, though Thunder Junction didn't release to the public until April, that stuff had to be, large chunks of it have to be paid for in March, so it's available in April through distributors, your local stores, whatever. Companies do this purposely. Everybody knows how the math works on the business side and stock investors. That's just what companies do, right? You know your release isn't coming. You set your order date to be in the first quarter, so you make your first quarter numbers look better, blah, blah, blah. But numbers are numbers. Those sales were going to happen either first quarter, second quarter. Didn't matter.
So and even with the Transformers movie last year, those always help spike Transformer numbers, because those movies do stupid business and they're pretty much review proof. Nobody skips going to see Transformers because it got a 30% on Rotten Tomatoes. They're big, dumb robot movies. They have a built-in audience and they make a bunch of money every time they come out.
Dude, that's the way I felt about Pacific Rim. Yeah, just exactly. Big, dumb robots and monsters. I don't care what you tell me about it. I'm going to go watch it.
Fast and Furious, big dumb cars.
Yep, gonna go watch it.
Ain't nobody watching it for the acting, the plot, any of that stuff.
And also, the other thing too about Transformers is it's not just the movie. That usually leads to like extra action figures and t-shirts and lunchboxes and blah, blah. Like, so there's a bunch of other stuff associated with that that offsets some of these numbers, which is good. But this is an overall pretty positive picture. Which hence why the percentage went up on stock 11% is because if you go through this report, they're basically saying, okay, cool. We have more operating profit than we had last year. You know, that's cool. Our adjusted operated profit number is significantly up, like $100 million over same time last year. You know, their margins are up 14% compared to the prior year. They've sold down some of the inventory they were sitting on. Some of that was just sell prices, get it out through stores or whatever you got to do, but they're sitting on less waste now. So that's a thing.
And every week I found out something crazy they own that I didn't know or heard from. Apparently Peppa Pig is Hasbro, and for some reason Peppa Pig had a good 2023. I don't know what
Oh dude, Peppa Pig's big for them,
right?
And like, I don't get it, because I mean, admittedly I don't have kids, but generally, like, when I've seen like Dora the Explorer or Thomas the Train or whatever, I'm like, okay, I get it. I don't know, man. I've watched Peppa Pig a couple times trying to understand. I don't get it.
My kids are a little bit older than the, you know, the, I think I would say Gabby was probably of the age right when Peppa Pig was starting to become popular, but now that wasn't really ever one of her. I think some of it is just British accents, because one of the things I've heard is that there are so many kids that are running around speaking with the British accent, because I guess a lot of cases, Peppa Pig is probably the first time they've ever heard one. So
fair.
Just, you know, and British accents make stuff sound cooler. That's why no matter what ethnicity the villain is, a lot of times they have a British accent. It just makes everything sound bigger and more grandiose.
Fair. But yeah, Peppa Pig, I see it on a lot of places. Kids love it. Makes sense. But yeah, going through the report, you know, they gave a lot of money to investors. There's $97 million went out in the first quarter, I think they said. So between 42 and 61 cents per share. So people got decent payouts there that they weren't really expecting, I think, compared to what the expectations were. And Furby made some money.
I know Furby was there. That's another example. So I didn't know Hasbro had.
Now, what's crazy is, I knew Furbies had a minute back in like 2016, 2017, because they had tried some new technology stuff and whatever, and they had a little pop. I didn't know nothing about Furblets.
Right? That's the new thing.
Yeah. Which little apparently,
baby Furbies that can talk to the big Furby.
Yeah, and if you don't know what they are, they look like I guess just the head of the Furby, I guess the way you describe it. Like, if you took a Furby head, gave it longer hair and ears, and then gave it a loop so you could put it on, like, a keychain or a backpack or something, whatever, and then paint it like you would a Lisa Frank coloring book. That's a Furblet. And apparently, they sold a crap ton of them starting in December through the beginning of this year. Furby's made a bunch of money. Who knew?
Furby's like Captain Freedom in The Running Man. Every time, you know, they need a little bit of help, Furby comes out of retirement, starts being a good earner for him again.
Yep. But, okay, now, specifically, you know, they did put magic and digital gaming in a category and talked about that and said, overall, 7% up, largely driven by license agreements and other stuff. Baldur's Gate, obviously still bringing in some money. Monopoly Go, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, made its couple billion dollars or whatever. So that's helped. Tabletop revenue also increased 5%. And they're saying largely due to Magic the Gathering shipments to do with Outlaws of Thunder Junction. And strong demand for the Fallout Commander set. So those things sold, made money, moved the bar up 5%.
So, and then, know, they pretty much dodged the Karloff Manor bullet, because that's probably the probably kind of the weakest set they've had in terms of interest in sales, and everything else just picked it up.
For sure. And it makes me wonder, and I don't know that this part's speculation here, but it makes me wonder if Wizards also knew that on some level and printed less. So there's a lower cost into Karloff Manor, knowing that they had Fallout and they had Thunder Junction, you know, just right around the corner from it. Yeah. Because that would affect the overall numbers as well, too. But again, I don't know that. It just would make sense if you knew you had two big releases coming, you know, 4 weeks apart each, basically. But they said operating profit increased 60%. Overall operating profit margin, 38%. 38.8, so basically 39%. And again, due to high licensing revenues, mix of revenues, cost management, all that stuff. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's not like it's gangbuster numbers, but definitely not crazy numbers like everybody expects.
It's not make your president quit numbers. It ain't that.
No. And I think this comes back to what we talked about, right? Like, this is why we don't speculate, because nothing here would have driven somebody off their job. Hell, if anything, you're one of the three or four bright spots that was up. So they're not going to fire you over that.
And what's crazy is, even though they ended up having to sell Entertainment One off, like, right, they were starting to hit their stride. The Dungeons and Dragons movie actually turned out to be really good. An infinitely better movie than the last Dungeons and Dragons movie they did. But, you know, they had already at that point lost so much money. It was just
time. Yeah.
It happens to everybody. Making movies is hard. That's why most gaming companies don't try to do it. That's the biggest hit they're going to have making movies, and they still weren't able to turn a profit because so many other things kind of went around. And then apparently the other thing they did recently is there's some kind of Wendy Williams documentary, and that's apparently getting a bunch of attention, drawing a lot of eyeballs, but, you know, they're already out. So whoever has Entertainment One now is going to benefit off a lot of the money that Wizards poured or Hasbro poured into it.
Yeah.
It happens sometimes.
But yeah, they also put in, you know, the numbers on their assets and everything else. So they've sold some stuff down. They have a whole plan in for, like, how they're taking care of old debts. So, like, yeah, I mean, and they acknowledge all the stuff. They have all the things in the bottom listed as concerns or risk, and they're all the typical stuff, you know. Shipments what's coming in and out of China, you know, cost of things around the world, different countries doing better or worse with inflation. You know, all
Russia's
that stuff.
Still the enemy. You still really can't do business with them. You're not supposed to anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I just, overall, it's like you can pick one or two things and try to make it a negative thing. But the reality is, everybody in the business, on the business end of stuff, again, according to the stocks and everything else, everybody saw it as positive and went up.
Yeah, all the people that cover, because I don't pretend to be, to have money or to be an expert in money, but I know where to find the experts, and all of them are saying that this is way better than what they thought it was going to look like. Hence, you know, the stock going up in the short term.
Now, we were talking about this off the air. I do think the middle part of this year has potential to be the down part for Wizards, because we got Modern Horizons 3 coming up. Already people are speculating sales are up, whatever. So expect that's going to sell well.
Yeah.
But then we have the Assassin's Creed weird, like, 7-card booster pack thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the wheels are going to fall off a little bit.
It's, like I said, it's a weird thing for it to just be such a small amount of cards. And then, you know, where Fallout is really peaking with the TV show and people getting interested in the games again. Assassin's Creed, I feel like not nearly as much. If you'd done this maybe, I don't know, 7-10 years ago, okay, I would probably see it more. Although, I looked and we were trying to figure out, like, okay, there must be some reason why it comes out in July. Like, with Fallout, it was because of the TV show was going to launch in April. With Walking Dead, it's because I think the final season of The Walking Dead was coming out right around when it was releasing. So what we got in July is apparently there's going to be a big kind of teaser slash reveal for Assassin's Creed Red. And the thing about it is, well, first of all, there's all the, you know, obviously everybody wants to say their game is the best game ever. They're saying, yeah, this is going to be the biggest game we've ever done. Everybody says it every time they put a game out. But the main thing that's going to be probably a huge selling point is they're finally going to feudal Japan. People have been begging for that since the whole Assassin's Creed theme of, hey, this is an action series set in different historical eras. Like, where are we going to Japan? When are we going to Japan? When do I get to be a ninja? And I watched the teaser. The only thing they put out really that says got any concrete reveal of any kind is just basically a ninja. Assassin's Creed, you get to be a ninja. Oh my God! And that's all they show.
I think that'll be great for the video game. I just don't know how many that's going to move, how many booster boxes of a 7-card booster pack.
Unless maybe they're going to get to reveal something like they announced during Ubisoft Forward or whatever it is, whatever their version of E3 is now. Say, hey, if you want to see the hero of Assassin's Creed Red for the first time, go buy these cards. Maybe they do something like that. And then there will be people that go buy the cards that never intend to play Magic, but they want to collect it because that's the first time this new character has been revealed.
I could go maybe for that. Yeah, you got to have like something. That. Because I think one of the things that really helped Fallout was like, cool, I only had to go buy 4 Commander decks.
Right.
And I basically had all the cards. Now, if you want the special versions and the foil, whatever, go buy the collector boosters. But like, you could have everything in 4 decks. You know, you spend a couple $100, you got everything. Like, it's going to be harder to do that because Assassin's Creed doesn't have commander decks. And these are slightly better booster packs than the Aftermath pack, Epilogue packs, I think is what we called them or whatever. Or so maybe, but
it's weird because the way they've done everything else, I assume this would be the same thing. Okay, give me an Ezio Auditore deck. Give me insert 3 other Assassin's Creed main characters here, but that's apparently maybe the 7 cards are those. But
I think you and I both, when they announced Assassin's Creed, we were like, oh, okay, that'd be a commander set.
Yeah,
and then it was weirdly announced as this awkward booster set, and we kind of just went, huh? Okay,
this has March of the Machine Aftermath feelings. Yep. Like, what are we doing here?
I will say this though. The rest of the year looks good. People are already excited about Bloomburrow and the whole like animal stuff and the cutesy things.
The furries are going to eat.
You
give a product that it has.
Oh, animal dude, themes. The costumes that might be available when we get to Vegas. People are going to go ham on that stuff. But then
they turned, is it Raul? They turned into an otter, which is
the
cutest animal ever.
But we have Duskmourn, which is like the haunted house stuff or whatever, which that'll go over big. And there's a crazy amount of crossover you could do for that, especially around like October, November with Halloween and whatever. And then you have a Pioneer Masters at the end of the year, which will probably be loaded with reprints, which will get people to buy it. So you do have one down spot in the year, but the rest...
Pioneer does still exist.
It does. But yeah, I think this is overall probably still going to be like we said it before, it's going to be a good year for Wizards. But it's going to get talked a lot about being a down year because you had last year with the craziest selling Lord of the Rings set.
Yeah, right? You can't have record profits every year, unfortunately.
Yeah, so instead of 1.5, 1.6, whatever the number was, it'll probably be like 1.1, 1.2 billion, which is still a crazy big number, right? But everybody's going to go, oh, well, they were down, you know, 300 million or whatever. It's like, well, yeah, sure, but
it's easy to do the clickbait article. Hey, profits were down by 30%, but you don't get the context of, oh, by the way, profits were at a record high the previous year. From
not just that, but it's huge release for Magic, huge release for D&D Digital. Now, I will say they do have, I think, 6th edition D&D or whatever coming out soon, so we'll see how that affects sales, and that might prop the numbers up too. But if you're worried about overall numbers on Wizards and on Hasbro, they're normal. They're fine. Business as usual, slightly up across the board on some things. So, like, yeah.
It's the same way small towns will manipulate their crime stats. We had 200% fewer murders this year. When you know, you're talking about two.
Yeah, exactly. You had 2 last year and 0 this year. Awesome. Yeah. But all right, let's get into some of these soapboxy things. Now, I don't even know how I want to approach this one, but there was a dude, and I'm going to see if I can get the username correct, because it's something also. It's just Arab is what it says. His handle is Your Fellow Arab. You're going to find out quickly he's not anybody's fellow. But he starts out with, I used to be a gamer, professional at that. And I'm like, okay, you're already trying to start with some credentials. And as far as I know, nobody knows who this guy is. But he does have a lot of followers. So maybe he was, back in the day, some big gamer. I just didn't know him. He wasn't a industry transcending name, as far as I know. But he says, gaming got gay. And I mean that literally. I was like, okay, where the hell is this going? And basically, he's complaining about people getting to wear cat ears and purple hair and inclusivity. And then his argument is that before all that started, everything was already inclusive because no matter the color of your skin or your orientation, we got to discriminate against everybody. And it's like, how is this positive? He says it was a war zone where you could let it all out. And we were all equal. I'm like, okay, so
that's never been true.
But also, if your excuse was, I needed to get out my frustrations by discriminating against everybody.
Yeah, not the argument.
That's not a positive argument.
No.
Like, you're literally saying, I have pent-up anger, and the way I deal with this anger is to go yell racial slurs at everybody. Like, that's the actual problem. I don't think he understands. Right. So then he goes on talking about trying to combat discrimination and things become less inclusive and blah, blah, blah. Of course, he's just getting lit up in the comments, right? Every possible post, meme, whatever. I would say it's like, you know, the typical 1 or 2% are jumping in trying to defend him. But generally, it's a bunch of people going,
it's
dude.
It's an indefensible position, pretty much.
Yeah, like, Even if, like, I squint really hard toward the light at the end of the tunnel, I can almost see an argument you're trying to make. But when your argument is literally, I took out my frustrations by getting to use all these racial slurs against everybody, that should have been fine. Ain't going to fly.
What other people call these examples? They're trying to get, yeah, what about Blazing Saddles? What about, what about Richard Pryor and Chevy Chase doing it? Those are the greatest, some of the greatest comedians and writers that have ever lived. Spoiler alert, you're not them. And by the way, they were working.
That's the biggest difference.
Whatever riff you're doing in Overwatch chat, like, no, nobody paid to hear that. You know?
Oh, yeah. Like, but to your point, they were working, right? When you have Chase and Pryor doing that scene on Saturday Night Live or whatever, they both talked about it beforehand. It was rehearsed. Everybody on set agreed. They knew what they were going to hear, right? This wasn't just two dudes who were in a bar on a headset in a game calling each other racial slurs.
Yeah.
Right?
Because in your regular game chat, we haven't discussed this beforehand. Nobody's agreed to this. And again, nobody's there to hear you. We're here to game. That's just a thing people don't realize.
Oh, dude. I will tell you, I grew up with friends of all kinds of backgrounds, and we had inside jokes and we called each other different things because, you know, stuff we experience in each other's house or whatever. But we also knew, like, you can't say that in front of some people because they don't know you like that. Like, you can't just walk around and, you know, call each other some names that are, like, not really racist, but slightly if the wrong person hears it. Like, you got to know. Like, I had a friend.
By the way, the people that are getting paid to do that get in trouble all the time. Anthony Jeselnik, you know, who does that kind of shock comedy, lost his Comedy Central show because I don't think either of them realized kind of who they had jumped in bed with. They wanted all Anthony Jeselnik's ratings, but they didn't want the controversy that came with his kind of comedy. And he
to be fair, Shark Party, that segment was actually kind of bomb, though. Yeah. It was out of pocket. Yeah. But I was like, I see what you're doing.
You really got to know who you hired. And he wanted Comedy Central's big fat paycheck, as would any working comedian. But he didn't want the censorship and all the stuff that comes with working with a major conglomerate.
Yeah, man, I just don't think people think about some of that sometimes. Of like, and you're talking about people dealing with that on a professional level. Like, it's obviously going to be worse for people even at a lower level because these are all strangers you're talking to. Like, they don't know you, they don't know your history, they don't know your personality, none of that. And you're just throwing out expletives at people and being like, "Oh, it should be fine. That should be okay in this space." Like, no, it's not. And people, you know, the same thing people say, "Oh, well, people talk about this in the locker room. You just don't hear it." Like, no, I played sports. We've been in a lot of locker rooms. Like, we ain't calling each other racial names. You got to play with those dudes later.
Right? You're going to need them to block for you or pass you the ball. Or at some point, you're going to need their help. No matter how good athlete you are, at some point, you're going to need somebody's assistance to get the job done. And you need them to like you.
Exactly. So, like, I don't understand, man. But I just thought it was worth mentioning, like, this mentality is still out there. Right, that you should be allowed to be racist in gaming and it should be fine. As long as you're being racist to everybody, then who cares?
Yeah, like, equal opportunity racism. What the?
Like, no, that's not how it works, man. Like, again, I can get if like you like the space being a certain way and you don't like certain things, or okay, let's have that talk. But when your defense is, but I want to be racist to everybody, like, sorry, dog, can't get with it. Like, just not going to be a thing.
You can't expect anybody. And by the way, even the people you say that are complaining now, they never liked it. Now we're just, black people have microphones now. You know, we have podcasts. We have many ways.
It's true. We got cameras now in public.
All of this. Marginalized people are able to actually talk about these things now, where in so many cases made before, we weren't comfortable with it.
Well, the problem now... You know what it is? It's because you got receipts now.
Right.
Right. It's honestly, to take it back about 10 years now, like, it's like the Ray Rice thing, right? When we heard, like, oh, you know, he got in a fight with his significant other, whatever. But when you can see it, that changes everything, right? Like, even though it should be the same thing. Like, you hit your significant other, that's bad. It should always be bad. But everybody's opinion changes when there's footage. You know, all of a sudden, everybody's like, whoa, hold up. Like, even though it's the same thing we've been telling you for like 2 weeks, but then the footage comes out, all of a sudden, you want to get upset about it, right? So that's why.
So many people, fortunately for them, had never seen domestic violence, you know, in any capacity. They just had heard about it. And as you said, to see an almost 300-pound man knock his wife unconscious and then step over her with body language indicates he's done this before.
Yep.
He is.
But this applies to everything, though. I think just like you're saying, though, there's recordings, right? We've got cameras. We got all the audio you want. We have all the receipts from locations and everything, because now there's cameras and you know, payment things, and you can track everything. So now you can put together, like, no, this actually happened.
Yeah.
And that changes those stories for people. But all right. I'm going to get off this because, you know, it's just a knucklehead on Twitter. I'm sure you got something else.
Yeah, as I've been telling y'all, I've been doing some WWE 2K24 content over my YouTube channel because the game is just incredible this year. And one of the things I noticed when you obviously to go into making videos, you put in what they call creator safe mode. So you've muted, you know, a lot of the background noise, a lot of the commentary. And in previous years when I did this, it might be another day or two before I turn the commentary back on, because after playing the game for a week, I had heard every, you know, joke that in many cases I'd heard the same jokes for the previous 3 years. But this is the first year they've done such a good job on everything. I miss the commentary when it's not on, because after having played the game for, at this point, almost 2 full months, there are still things in interactions I hear that I haven't heard yet. For example, Cody Rhodes and Dusty Rhodes are both in the game, and there's interactions for when the two of them are fighting each other. You know, this match never actually happened in real life. They have, you know, they have a whole story for why Cody and Dusty are fighting each other. If you do Roman Reigns versus Bruno Sammartino, which you would think would be just the odds of that, because, you know, there are so few people playing the video game that even, first of all, know who the hell Bruno Sammartino is. But yeah, they even have interactions for Roman Reigns versus Bruno Sammartino, because talk about what a dream match this is and how Bruno is essentially the Roman Reigns of his era, the unstoppable champion. And just, I continue to be blown away by everything that they've done in the game this year. It's just phenomenal.
I wonder if that's going to be kind of the new concept going forward for games. Because I'm realizing now so many games have like all this extra audio pre-recorded for it. Like we talked about it with Baldur's Gate 3. I think they said they had something like 160 hours worth of like vocal recordings and stuff for all parts. So you can go through the game and you might only hear like half the stuff they ever recorded.
Right.
For people, you know, which is crazy to think about,
which is probably the majority of people, there's stuff you'll never hear.
Yeah, that's just a crazy thing to think about. Like, you can play the game for 100 hours and never hear half the stuff they recorded. Right? Isn't that wild?
That's replay value for you.
Yeah. But even, like you're saying, for there's stuff in WWE 2K24 that unless you get the right matchup or the right venue or the right pay-per-view, whatever, you just might not hear some of the stuff they recorded for it. Which is kind of cool. Honestly, I think it keeps games from getting repetitive. You know, you always have something fresh. Or even for a viewer in the modern world where you're watching multiple people make content, you're not hearing the same things over and over.
It also helps that, you know, we're to the point where the commentators that are currently working WWE are young enough to where they understand how video games work. Probably grew up playing some video games in their case, as opposed to King and JR, where you can tell this was kind of like just they're doing another voiceover job. They're not, they kind of know how it works, but they don't really know how it works. Like Corey Graves is somebody that I'm sure probably grew up playing WWF No Mercy and WrestleMania 2000 and all those games. Because Xavier Woods, we wrestlers have YouTube channels now where they play this and numerous other video games. So you have a whole generation where it's not, you know, the wrestlers we grew up watching would have beat the crap out of people like us for playing video games and wanting to know why this game was that way.
Yeah, but dude, that old WrestleMania arcade game, that thing slapped, for real.
Every 4 or 5 years, they would just hit everything perfect.
Oh, man. But yeah, that's a good call out, though. I think that's something to keep an eye on for games going forward, because it sounds like that's kind of the new way of design to help offset some of the repetitiveness, which is kind of cool. But all right, it's that time. We kind of learned some things this week, and these are both kind of very different. So what do you got for everybody this week, Brian?
Yeah, we were talking about Baldur's Gate a little bit earlier, and just the incredible job that they did. And Baldur's Gate is the first game since they've had basically 5 different people handing out what are considered the 5 major game awards, like how, for example, movies have, you know, the Oscars, the Golden Globes, etc. There's, you know, 5 awards that are considered to be the kind of elite awards in gaming, and Baldur's Gate 3 is the first game to just sweep the category. All 5 of them. Nobody before, not Spider-Man, not Legend of Zelda, not even Grand Theft Auto, has swept all 5 of the major gaming awards. So just another tip of the hat. Sad they're not going to, the Larian Studios isn't going to work on the franchise anymore. But I mean, they've definitely earned the right to go kind of do whatever their dream is after doing just the game's going to stand the test of time. We'll be playing this, talking about it 20 years from now.
So they won the equivalent of like the GOAT or the EGOT. Right?
Yeah. they got.
That's pretty wild.
Technically, Boris losing the EGOT, because at this point, there's at least 15 or 20 people that have an EGOT, right?
Yeah, that's true.
They are the only people that
have. There's not a lot. I think there's maybe like 10 or 11, something like that, but there's a few that have them.
The irony is, I think the term was coined by Philip Michael Thomas, who I don't think ever won any of them, unfortunately for him. But he was talking about how he wanted to get the EGOT as an actor, and then he was like, what are you talking about? Oh, you know, Emmy, Grammy, and then people start calling it that.
Yeah, because it's the Emmy, the Grammy, the Oscar, and the Tony. So you got to do something on Broadway or whatever. But yeah, this is kind of a cool point, you know, because I think it also shows how much D&D and role-playing culture have kind of permeated gaming and nerd culture as a whole, right? Because there's tons of people playing D&D that never played before. Hell, there's a bunch of channels where people are just making role-playing content. You know, a lot of it D&D, but there's other stuff.
And people watch it. People that have never played D&D, people that never intend to play D&D, but they watch this because it's just, especially to see some of the world's best actors and voice actors doing this, it ups the entertainment level.
For sure. And I think that carried over to Baldur's Gate. I mean, just like you said earlier, like sometimes you just hit things at the right time, right? There really wasn't a big role-playing game in that window of time. You know, there wasn't anything D&D related really. So it's like people were kind of primed for that. And the game itself was fantastic. So it's like you checked all the boxes at the right time. And it was a runaway hit by far. That's cool, though, that they got every award. That's pretty damn impressive, right? Honestly.
And there'll be probably others, but there'll be another first.
True. Mine, this is more something that I saw that was asked. And it started me down a rabbit hole of thought that I'm going to take the listeners on us.
Yeah. I know this is wild, y'all.
So, for those who don't know, there are two people involved in a scenario. One is Joey Chestnut, who is the world record holder for eating hot dogs, Nathan's Famous Hot Dogs on 4th of July for, like, I think 9 years running or something. Like, a long-ass time. He's gotten the mustard belt, and he goes around and does eating competitions. Then there's Usain Bolt, who's now a retired runner, who I think still has the world record in the 100 meters at, like, 9.8 something. So a little under 10 seconds. Fantastic, won a bunch of Olympic medals. He ran the 200 meters as well. The question then became, and this was on, Joey Chestnut was on a podcast, and they'd asked him this question of, if you raced Usain Bolt in 100 meters, could you beat him if neither of you could leave the starting line until you consumed a full hot dog? And that started getting me thinking, like, this is actually a real question. Normally when people ask this stuff, it's kind of dumb. But in this one, I was like, okay, Joey Chestnut eats a hot dog and bun, because that's the way you have to do it in competition, in about 2 seconds. The average person is going to run like 100 meters in probably like 17 to 19 seconds, but we're not in shape, right? Joey Chestnut is in shape because he tries to keep his cardio up and whatever, so his body's not falling apart from eating all the food. So I'll give him benefit of the doubt and say he runs in like a 15 to 16 second. So that would mean, in theory, he's got a 17 second to 18 second total time. So if we say Usain Bolt being retired, it probably not going to run his perfect time. We'll give him 11 seconds. Like, can he get a hot dog down in like under 6 seconds? And that's where it kind of like, I don't know. There's so many things.
I'm pretty sure,
like,
he can.
See, like, I don't even know. I think he could. I think we settled on, I think you can train to get a hot dog in 6 seconds easier than Chestnut could train to knock off time off his 100 meters.
I'm pretty sure I can get a hot dog down in 6 seconds just because I've had to do it, like trying to get to the press box and get sit down and get everything set. So yeah, I'm sure damaged a hot dog in at least between 6 to 10 seconds.
See, like, I want to try because I feel like,
again, I wasn't, you know, that wasn't anything I was training for.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I had to eat before the game started.
Because, like, my thought is, I feel like if I was trying, I could probably do it in like 10 to 12 seconds. Without, like, risking choking or whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, if I tried, you know, like, I'm working toward a goal, like, once a day, I'm going to eat this hot dog, time myself. Like, maybe I could get it down to 6 seconds.
You can do the trick that I think is, they actually call it Japanese, because I believe a Japanese competitive eater came up with the idea of dunking the bun in
water
and then just getting that down really fast and then doing the hot dog separately.
So I'm like, maybe? Like, I could probably, like,
I'm sure I've done probably 10 or 11 seconds. Again, wasn't training for it.
Yeah, I'm still, like I said, I'm still giving the edge to Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
But I could see scenarios.
Way in hell I could ever run 100 meters in anything close to what it'd be taking.
Oh, I feel like right now I'm still in decent shape, but even then I might give you 15 seconds. Like, so it's not like I'm even close to the record time at all. So I'm 50% slower than he's probably going to be. So even if I could get the hot dog down, could I take him? Probably not. Like, you know, with the combined time, no way. But it's an interesting thing. Like, because normally, like I said, you hear these types of questions and they're on the internet. And it's always like a lopsided thing. Like, obviously, it goes the other way. But this is one that I'm like, this is close enough. You kind of have to logic it out.
Yeah, one of the ones I heard back in the day was Devin Hester versus a bear starting at midfield, you know, who wins?
Yeah, like weird stuff like that. Like, you know, the big one on the internet for a while was like, how many three-year-olds could you beat in a fight or whatever it was? Like that weird thing. And it was like, man, y'all ain't wrestled kids enough. You're trying to say 100. Like, ain't no way. But yeah, this one.
It depends on their personality, you know.
Sure.
I mean, let's say you just hit the first one and put him down. Okay, people are going to start crying. People are going to start running.
But here's the other thing, too, I would say about this scenario with Chestnut and Bolt is that it doesn't even need a lot of extra info. You know what I mean? It's like, we know what each of the guys do. We have numbers on what they do. Like, we can come up with realistic scenarios as to why this should or shouldn't work. Because a lot of the other ones, we have to add a lot of caveats and whatever. But this is just like, no, we have all the information. Like, is this a real thing? And what's cool is Chestnut even gave that answer. He was just like, man, I don't know. Like, I don't know how fast he can eat a hot dog. Like, he might still get me, you know, like, but there is a world where he could win the race. You know, like, so it's like, yeah, just a fun thing to speculate on. I'll probably post it on Twitter at some point to see what people's responses are. But this felt like a fun thought exercise to go like, how do you weigh each thing or each person's skill or talent, which is kind of fun. But anyway, let's get into some topics. We have a really interesting thing. We've seen cross promotions with other brands in Japan, especially with anime stuff or artists or whatever, because that's big, obviously, in the Japanese culture. Well, they put up a video over the weekend that was basically a crossover with Thunder Junction and Cowboy Bebop, which was kind of a surprise because I was like, Cowboy Bebop ain't been a thing in like a decade. Like, this is crazy.
It seems like they're moving because they just did an Overwatch collaboration. Somebody at whatever company is in charge, I don't know what the official term is for whoever is in charge of Cowboy Bebop or whatever the company is called, but somebody over there flipped a collaboration switch because these are two just kind of random things to come out of the box with. We're going to do Overwatch, we're going to do Magic Together. Okay.
I wonder if they're priming up for some type of reboot or sequel or something, and maybe that's what this is all about. Because it was cool. I mean, it was basically like a promo video, but it was all shot
maybe,
like...
I think they did a Netflix show, so maybe season two
maybe that was
coming
it.
Or something. It might be one of the reasons.
Yeah, for those of you that haven't seen the video, it's shot like a Cowboy Bebop intro, but it's all Thunder Junction, and you can tell from the outlines, one is supposed to be like Oko or whatever, but it's got like the plain bright colors, the primary colors in the background with like the shadow figures running across and like text scrolling on the screen. Like, it's just really well done if you're into that style of animation or whatever. But then we found out, it was either yesterday or the day before, that it's not just a video. You can actually get that artwork on cards. Okay. So yeah, what Wizards is doing is you go to Standard Showdown at your local stores from now and I think until July. You have to look at the dates again. But there's 5 different cards that are going to be available for a couple of weeks at a time. So you can hit up however many events you want. There are going to be so many at each event for the top so many finishers or whatever. And they're actually all playable cards. They're all cards that appear in deck lists. I don't think any of them were rares. I think they were all commons and uncommons. But all very playable commons and uncommons, which is pretty cool. So looks neat. I mean, they have like that primary pastel kind of color on the back on some of them, you know, with like a shadowy figure on the side or whatever's supposed to represent the artwork done with like the thick black lines and just really cool. And I'm not even like I really like the music in Cowboy Bebop, but I'm not like the hugest fan of the anime itself, but this promotion's really cool, dude. Like, and I don't even know, like, what were they doing for Overwatch? Because I didn't even see that
at all. Just different skins, and then I think you can unlock some more if you play a certain series of challenges.
Okay. So, yeah, I don't know if this means, like I said, if there's something big coming, or maybe, like I said, it's just part of the Netflix show promotion, and they just might as well get all your stuff out there while it's good timing. You know, I don't know. But cool to see that that stuff still exists, that they're even just doing it. Because it was a total surprise, and people were kind of losing their mind over it a little bit. And I was like, yeah, it does look neat. I don't know what it means. And because my thought initially was just that, oh, this is just something they're doing in Japan, and it's a cool crossover with Cowboy Bebop, whatever. But then we found out there's actual cards you can win. And like,
I guess it makes sense if you're going to do a Western-themed set anyway, then hey, it's a perfect play. Because Overwatch also has a couple of characters that are cowboys and have a Wild West theme, and obviously a bunch of people that fit into the archetype of a bounty hunter, you know, somebody that's really good shooting guns. So it makes sense there too.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting timing, you know. But if you can find those brands where it crossover and it makes sense, and you already have fans in that space, then it's just a double win for everybody. So, you know, just slow clap, good job everybody involved, like, because obviously everyone's excited about it. Another thing I wanted to point out is Blizzard has something going on right now. Like, we know Blizzard, if they have a new project, it makes a lot of money. That's kind of the rule, right? Even the weird MOBA that they had for a while, that you could play characters from all their games or whatever, like, that was hot for a minute. But if you go look at their website, they have a bunch of jobs available, like 45 or so, and about a quarter of them are for a thing that's titled Unnamed Game. So I don't know if this is them just starting a new project, if it's a spinoff of another thing, but they're obviously starting to build out the department for whatever this new thing is. So one, this is kind of a heads up of, hey, there might be something sweet coming from Blizzard in another year or two. But also, if you're looking to get into the industry, here's an opportunity where a whole bunch of jobs are open up on a brand new project. So hit them up. You may have to move to like Southern California or to Texas in their Austin studio or something, maybe. I don't know where the jobs are, but hey, if you want an opportunity, at least it's there, because you don't get too many of those. Another programming note I should point out is Pro Tour Seattle is this weekend. And this is kind of the first time we haven't had the Pro Tour attached to another major event or convention in a while. So this is going to be a bit different. This event, my understanding, is just going to be the pros and their families and staff. And it's kind of the only people that are going to be there. And the other interesting thing about this one is it's the first standard format event we've had on the Pro Tour that's happened near the beginning of the season in a long time. For whatever reason, Wizard had scheduled a lot of the Pro Tours to be toward the back end of the season, usually the back like 3 or 4 weeks for some reason. And I don't know, maybe they wanted more prep time for the players or something. I don't know what the logic was, but I know a lot of viewers always said, well, we already know the format, so why are we going to watch, right? And there was always some innovation because, you know, it's the top players, but rarely was there like a new deck or you saw something crazy with the card. You didn't know how the combo was going to work or anything like that. But now, with all these cards in Thunder Junction, nobody really knows what's going to happen yet. So it'd be interesting to see if it generates more viewership because it's a newer season or the event's happening closer to the beginning of the season. Because I don't have a clue. People ask me, like, what do you think it's going to do? I'm like, man, I don't know. The event still starts on like a Thursday, I think. So like we'll see what happens.
And have they definitely said they're doing some kind of coverage on it?
Yeah, they announced the coverage team. They had the coverage schedule was posted. So they're going to do the full shebang like a normal Pro Tour, just going to be less of an audience, I guess, live. But like, it's a weird production, man. Yeah. Where it's a thing we're not used to. But my understanding, and again, this is heard from somebody who heard from somebody, you know, through the grapevine. So I'm not going to say this is true. I'm just going to tell you it came at least from a source that I trust. I can at least say that much. But my understanding was they wanted this one to be at an event, another Magic Fest, or MagicCon, and they were thinking my the way it was told to me, it was going to be scheduled probably in Japan. But as they got closer to scheduling it, apparently there was something to do with like some holiday or something or whatever in the area, and would have caused complications for people for travel and whatever. So they didn't want to do that, but then it was also kind of too late to book something else at the time of the year they wanted to book it. So the easiest thing was, well, you can get one hall and just do the pro tour just with just the players and do your full setup and production and whatever. And that's at least serviceable. And you do it in your backyard in Seattle, effectively their backyard. They're in Renton, which is like 20 minutes outside of Seattle. But you do it in your backyard, then you don't have to really go anywhere. Your staff's on hand. You make it easy on everybody. So if people are wondering, why is it not at an event? That's the story I got told, that there was going to be a thing. They couldn't make it work, but you didn't want to cancel or move the event. So it's easier just to host it at the Seattle Convention Center. So yeah, there's some inside baseball in case anybody's wondering. But on that note of events, that kind of brings us to the dinner table. And this came up over the weekend because we just finished a round of Command Fest, or the first ones of this new run of Command Fest. And some people were saying they couldn't go because the price has gotten too high for conventions or whatever, and their budgets are too tight, and they can only do one or two events a year now. But then that kind of got me thinking, because you've been to a lot of conventions too, you know, what do you think is fair for different convention pricing? And this isn't to like say anybody's wrong for feeling something's too high or not or whatever, but I'd be curious what your perspective is, having been somebody who's gone to a variety of events.
Yeah, but have I ever paid for any of them? Almost never.
Well, there you go.
Because yeah. I'm a reporter, so I go in on the press pass. So that's, yeah, so everything I'm about to say, I guess, take with a grain of salt. But I guess for me, I would say probably $30 a day is kind of where I would want to keep it.
Yeah, and funny, that's actually kind of in line. Like, if you buy a weekend badge for a lot of places, it's going to be, depending on the event, $60 to about $80 at a lot of major conventions these days. Some of the bigger ones, obviously, like I think San Diego Comic-Con, I think is more expensive. I think a weekend is like $100 or $120 or something. I think it's like $85-ish for like Dragon Con, I think. I don't know what Gen Con is right now. Gen Con used to be $70, which still falls inside of that $30 a day thing. But it was interesting that, because I thought about that too. I'm like, well, if I go to a thing and I'm there all day, you know, I say all day, and maybe I'm going to be there. I'm not going to be there when they open and when they close, but let's say noon to six or something, right? That's still 6 hours. And I do that 3 days in a row. That's a lot. That's 18 hours of entertainment. You know, if you even say your entertainment's worth $10 an hour, well, that's $180 worth of entertainment. You know, like, that's not crazy. Like, you know, when you think about it, like, that's a reasonable number.
Thing is, now there are so many other things battling for our time. I mean, like, when I first started going to conventions, Netflix wasn't a thing.
Sure.
Xbox Game Pass wasn't a thing. Also, I didn't have three children when I started going to conventions. So, you know,
that's another thing, too. I think that's a good call out.
It's harder to justify, like, hey, yeah, okay, you're the only one who would probably enjoy this, and you're going to go and spend how much time and how much money?
Well, not just that, but you're, to your point, if you have a family and your kids are also gamers, you're probably taking two or three people with you. It's not just you.
It depends on the convention, too. Like, yeah. We don't all play the same stuff. Like, for example, if it's a Madden convention, nobody else in the house will be interested.
Fair.
If it's a Magic convention, nobody else in the house will be interested. If it's League of Legends, there'll be one other person. Roblox would probably get almost everybody. But again, there are very few conventions that fall into the category where everybody is
interested. I will say, too, these events have all become a little more elaborate, where they're bringing in tons of artists. You know, they're doing a bunch of giveaways and big prizes. Like, they're flying in content creators so you can spend time playing with them and get stuff signed and whatever. And they're more a bigger production than they were before, you know, and that has to be accounted for in the cost for something. And here's the thing, too. What a lot of people don't know is they're like, oh, well, if space is a problem, they don't have to charge more. They can just get a bigger space. And it's like, in theory, but where in general, if you're in a certain neighborhood and you're looking at houses, price per square foot is going to be fairly consistent house to house. Like, it doesn't work like that at a lot of convention centers, in my experience. A lot of times is when you go to those much larger halls, which you need to service a bunch of these events now, they cost more because most of the people who rent those larger halls are going to be doctors groups, dental conventions, car shows, you know, like organizations with a lot of money. So they know they can charge more for the largest rooms because those are the only people that need them. Not necessarily what you want to be doing if you're trying to run a thing with a bunch of magic nerds, right? You know what I mean? Like, not quite the same. But, I mean, you know, even as much as we say some of these prices are high or whatever, all these shows seem to be selling out, right? I mean, we saw, hell, Chicago was practically standing room only. I mean, I went and looked the other day just to compare prices. Couldn't even get a ticket for the San Diego Comic-Con coming up. Those have been sold out, apparently. You know, a bunch of the ones for Dragon Con already sold out.
Because, again, at this point, they all carry their own economy. How many people are just content creators and content creators, you know, because how many YouTube channels have multiple people? You know, let's say your YouTube channel, like say it's Game Night or somebody that has, I don't know, how many they probably got just on their staff? Probably 10 or 12 people.
Game Nights? Yeah, they've got about that many.
Yeah, so you figure, you take that into account. Let's say there's 20 YouTube channels there, which probably isn't a high number. That might be a low number. Your YouTube channels, podcasts, websites.
I just think in general, and it sucks to say this for people that are struggling, and I know this is going to sound very terrible, but if you look at these events and they're selling out, the price isn't too high.
Yeah.
You know, and it sucks to say that. I mean, I totally get how that feels bad when you hear that, because I've been in that position before. Like, and it sucks. But, I mean,
well, it may be too high for the person that can't write it off on their taxes.
Sure, that's fair.
Because you or I are going to be able to deduct everything we do there. Anybody that's making content is going to be able to deduct anything we do there.
For sure. For sure. But it's something to think about, though, when we're talking about all these shows, like electronic shows, you know, whatever. Like, it does seem like the large majority of these things, if they're not selling out, they're near sellouts. So it's just like, you know, I remember when they announced the VIP Lotus packages or whatever for Magic Cons. I was like, whoa, these seem kind of high. Those things sold out in the first 2 hours or whatever. I was like, well, I guess not. You know what I mean?
Listen,
like,
if you ask me, you know, $500 tennis shoes are also too high, but they always sell out too.
Exactly. So I'm like, it's perspective, unfortunately. But I do understand if people can't make it, right? Because, again, if you're trying to go to multiple conventions, you probably can't budget for it. You know, probably have to pick one or two. And if one isn't giving you quite enough of the things that another one's giving you, can't make some of them.
If you're married and you got to justify these expenses, they're going to say, hey, you know, how much do you think you're going to actually make from going to this? And sometimes you don't even know until you've done the thing and done the content, because as you know, sometimes you don't know what video is going to do what. Sometimes the ones that something really exciting happened that one doesn't pop. And then the one that pops is something random that you almost by comparison threw together. So you just, it's almost impossible to judge what's going to do well until you've put the content out.
Oh, it's worse at my house because I live with the nerd and we just encourage each other's nerddom. So,
right.
Like, that ain't no better. Like, she went with some friends a couple of years ago. This was pre-COVID, but they were into Supernatural at the time, I think it was.
Oh, yeah.
They wanted to go to. And there was some big event in, like, Chicago, and they had friends that lived in Chicago, so they just went to a Supernatural convention. I was like, all right, cool. And that also sold out. I was like, right? Even back then. So, yeah, just crazy, man. Like,
one of the websites I work for, the reason I got hired was because literally the other lady primarily covered Supernatural. And that was all she could really have. I mean, she did other stuff, but the majority of her time went into covering Supernatural. So they kind of had to bring on somebody that could get to some of the other stuff, you know. Because
credit to that show and their fans too, because that thing ran for like 12 years or something. They got some wheels out of that thing.
Show was.
Yep. But yeah, it's a tough one, man. It's a weird thing to say as a gaming culture, a nerd culture, we're kind of a victim of our own success right now too.
Yeah.
Right? Because everything is popular right now if it's in the nerd space. which leads to a lot of these events being sold out, and that means tickets are going to go up, you know, on top of it. So not a lot we can do, you know. It's just an unfortunate thing right now, but hopefully if you do want to get to an event, you get to get to it, because these are a lot of fun, and I would love to meet people if I'm at similar events. It's always interesting. But all right, Brian, watch everybody they can find you on the social media machines.
Rich, I am Brian Sonic on Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram.
And you can find me everywhere at Power Dragon, PowerDragn. And my goodness, we're doing a ton of stuff with Thunder Junction. So if you're interested, swing on by some of the content. But as always, wherever you're watching and listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Please remember to take care of yourselves and your family. Remember to be awesome, and most importantly, be awesome to each other.
If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us at our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate, under patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at colorofmtg. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.